strange person.
Unbelievably powerful supercomputer that's running our reality, and we don't have a clue as to how to operate it. So when maybe you or somebody else creates an AGI system, and you get to ask her one question, what would that question be? What's outside the simulation? Say in your mind, say to yourself, I am more than my physical body, because I am more than physical matter. I can perceive that which is greater than the physical world.
Broadcasting from a shack on a hill in the Mossy Creek bottoms of Cane Creek, Arkansas. This is Lighting the Void, and I'm your host, Joe Roop. I hope you all had a great weekend. Welcome back. If you're just tuning in for the first time, this show is here for you live 5 nights a week, 9 p.m. Pacific to 11 p.m. right here on the Fringe FM. And we talk about all things conscious exploration, magic, mysticism, the occult, the paranormal, UFOs, the pop culture, technology, everything. Everything except COVID. I think we're done talking about that for a little while. Anyways, so yeah, we're going to be talking about a little conscious exploration. Actually, Jennifer Dumford's here with us, author of Liminal Dreaming, Exploring Consciousness at the Edges of Sleep. That's coming up. That's what we're going to discuss, and I got some questions about that, because we've all had some pretty weird and strange and awesome experiences at that point in time. But real quick, let me thank our sponsors at GetTheTea.com, also AncientLifeOil.com, and Metaphorical Archaeology. If you've had a paranormal experience that's caused you any trauma or post-traumatic stress, you can give Barbara Charlton a call at Metaphorical Archaeology at 214-995-3754. And also head over to UFOseekers.com, backed and supported by the Fringe FM and Lighting the Void. If you do want to keep a journalistic approach to what's going on in the field of ufology, give them a follow on Twitter as well at UFOseekers and at YouTube.com/UFOseekers. Also, another cool thing, I talked to our friend over at Mind and Magic, old Freighter Xavier. He's a good friend of ours, actually. And Freighter Xavier is offering everybody that all of our listeners, at the very least, to get 15% off of any of his products if you go to his Mind and Magic store on Gumroad and you put in the code word Fringe. We're also going to put up those banners and stuff there for you too. So he's giving a deal to the entire listening audience, so we got to thank him for that as well. So let's bring on our guest and let's get this cracking. All right, so our guest tonight is Jennifer Dumpert, and the websites are urbandreamscape.com as well as liminaldreaming.com. And Jennifer is a San Francisco-based writer and lecturer and the founder of the, what is that word, Jennifer? What is it? Okay, that's a big word. Oneironauticum. I said that right, didn't I? Oneironauticum. An international organization that explores the phenomenological experience of dreams as a means of experiencing with the mind. She also teaches the practice of liminal dreaming Surfing the Edges of Consciousness, Using Hypnagogic and Hypnagogic Dream States. Jennifer has lectured and led workshops at festivals, conferences, and venues such as Summit at Sea, Lighting in a Bottle, A Symbiosis. These are cool names. The Woman's Visionary Congress, Esalen Institute, the Ojai Institute, the Symposia, and Priceless. She wrote Meeting in Dream Worlds, the Oneironauticum. Yeah. Oneironauticum. I think I even know what that was. We're going to figure out what that is. That sounds cool. A chapter in exploring the edge realms of consciousness, liminal zones, psychic science, and the hidden dimensions of the mind, published by Evolver Editions. And she offered a 6-week class through Evolver called Expand Your Mind and How to Work with Liminal Dream States. And she contributes to Van Winkle's and Common Ground and has published in Dream Flesh, Dream Time, and Reality Sandwich. She is involved in consciousness hacking, the consciousness hacking movement, and has presented at CH in San Francisco, CH in New York, and the Transformational Technology Conference. Good Lord, that's a lot. You've been involved in the dream world, haven't you? For sure.
I have, a long time.
Tell me this word.
Oneironauticum. Yes. It's actually really funny. It's a bit since I've written this book, of course, I've been doing all of these podcast interviews. It's a bit of the bane of my existence. But what happened was in January of 2009, so a long time ago, I started this group, and it was just for my friends. And the idea was that on the same night, a group of us would spend the night in the same place, and that anyone who joined us, who wanted to join us remotely, could, and we would all work with the same onerogen. And an onerogen is something that produces vivid dreams. So onero is the Greek for dream, and gen is the Greek for like to create, like generate. And so we would all work with the same onerogen. And we would, a root or an herb or, you know, a practice or a sound or a scent, a lot of things are onerogens. And then, you know, whoever, how many people were involved would all use the same onerogen, and we would spend the night and have these dreams. And it was just a thing I was doing for my friends. So I gave it this dumb name, the Oneironauticum. Onero, again, the Greek for dream, and auticum, which is a place where things happen. But what these were kind of earlier days of the web, and what happened was, I don't know if you remember StumbleUpon, again, kind of earlier days of the web, there was this cool service called StumbleUpon, and they just rolled around on the web, and anytime they found something they thought it was cool, they would publish it. So they found it, and then from them, this website in Mexico City called Pajama Surf, which was kind of like a clearinghouse of kind of like what you're doing, you know, sort of like esoteric alternative ideas. So they were out of Mexico City, but all through Mexico, Central America, and South America, it was all of the people with any interest at all in any of these realms. You know, what they had available to them in Spanish was Pajama Surf, and Pajama Surf also did a bunch of stories. So what ended up happening was, at the height of it, when I was really spending a lot of time on the Oneironauticum, we had a couple thousand people worldwide, and on the same, all through the world, but a lot of them through, you know, North America, Mexico, Central America, and South America, a lot of people in Australia, weirdly. And, you know, some in Europe, all around the world. And on the same night, a group of us would spend the night in the same space using an oneirogen, and a couple thousand people worldwide would use the same oneirogen, and we would have this, like, worldwide dream-based slumber party. So that's the origin of that.
That's
complicated.
Cool. Man, that's really cool. So tell me what kinds of things that you've... I want to talk about all this, right? Like, I want to talk about the types of things that we can do in dreams that it's kind of funny me saying this, that I dream about doing in dreams, or the out-of-body experience, you know? So, like, I want to meet up with people in these states, and I want to be more lucid, like, and learn how to do these things. I believe we discussed this with Ian Wilson as well, but I'm curious to know everybody's experience with this, too, and yours has been pretty extensive What was one of the first things that you experienced in your dream life that you thought, oh, wow, you know, I didn't know I could do that, that really got you?
I had a watershed dream when I was living in Paris in 1987, 88. So I was 21, 22 at the time. And I was living in Paris, but I was baroque. And it was during the winter. So November, December, January, and Paris is pretty far north. The days are really short. And I was broke. I was living in the servants' quarters of this wealthy French property. And so I slept a lot. And I had this dream in which, in the dream, I remembered all of these other dreams that I had had in this same setting. And sometimes in a dream, you remember things like, oh, yeah, that's right. I was raised by, you know, squirrels on Mars. And now only now am I remembering it. You know, obviously not at all true. But my memories of other dreams in this dream, when I woke up, I was like, oh, yeah, now I remember all of these other dreams. So I had this kind of like state specific dream experience. And it made me, it started a period of time when I really cultivated the subjective me that I am in the dream world, which is a little bit different from the subjective me that I am in the waking world. And so I had a good 10 years of really playing with that, including I got to know what it is like to be me in the dream world, which, as I say, it has the me that I am when I'm dreaming has her own memory, her own head. She's a slightly different person than I am. And when I'm dreaming, I remember other dreams that I've had, you know, because it's there's sort of like a self in the dream. And I actually once had the experience of like a reverse lucid dream where dream me kind of came to the surface while I was awake. I was like, whoa, what is this place? This is really weird. But yeah, so I had a watershed dream. I mean, I've always been a pretty vivid dreamer, and that kind of set me on this course.
Right. So have you experienced then, even after that, where you and other people have met in the dream world together? That seems so impossible to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I specifically haven't. I mean, actually, the one really weird paranormal experience that I have in my life is in a dream, which I can tell you about in a second, but that's not what I was doing. But there are other, I mean, the thing about the Oneironauticum, which was this, I mean, I still do them like once a year or so, but for a long time I did them monthly. And so the people who were pretty active in it were super active in it. And everyone had their own reasons for participating. And one of the, like a few people were trying to meet up in Dream Worlds. They were trying to, the DJ Blue Tech, who was an amazing champion dreamer, was one of those. He was a remote participant in most of our sessions, and he was always looking for us. And there was the one time when, because in the morning I would do dream sharing, you know, so you could call in or email in, or now we have Zoom and that kind of thing, and dream and share what your dreams were along with those of us who had spent the night in person. And there was the morning when he was like, I finally did it. I found you all, that you had this many women and this many men. And he was right about that, you know. So that's why some people were doing what they were doing. That's not why I was doing what I'm doing, but, you know, I tend to neither be a believer nor a disbeliever. I'm kind of just going for experience.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's how I am too. Like, I think once we really start believing stuff, that we can trap ourselves in certain things too. Right, like we can keep ourselves from experiencing stuff that we might get to if we don't have those beliefs that just block us off from it.
Exactly. I mean, basically, if you don't know what you're expecting, then you're open to whatever it is that happens.
True. That's very true. So this book that you wrote, is this about, you know, your experiences with this, or is this more about your thoughts and theories, or what is
so
the summary
specifically,
of the book?
Specifically, it's about liminal dreaming. And liminal dreaming Again, liminal, I know I do a lot of this, but I think it helps explain things. Liminal comes from the Latin, actually, limen. And a limen is like a doorway or a threshold, neither here nor there, a place that's between. And liminal dreams are the ones that happen between waking and sleep. So when you're falling asleep, or let's say you're struggling to not fall asleep, and you start to have those kinds of hallucinations, and they can be visual, they can be aural, you know, sound.
Yeah.
Everyone has had them. Basically, we can talk about this in a minute, but there are like, you know, 7 or 8 EEG states that we all go through during the day. And 2 of them are these states. So as you're falling asleep, which is a really specific brainwave state, you have these crazy dreams in which you're simultaneously awake and asleep. And they aren't quite like REM dreams. They don't quite have the same kind of like storyline, like you're a person in a world and things are happening. It's more, there's not really like you or it. It's just kind of like all of your memories and dreams and associations in this kaleidoscopic swirl and this complete unfolding moment of now. So when you're falling asleep, that's called hypnagogia. Hypnos is Greek god of sleep, and agagos is approaching. And so when you're falling asleep and you have hypnagogia, we all know that feeling, like when you kick in your dream or your arm jerks, right, a myoclonic jerk or hypnic jerk, you know you're in it. And then in the morning when you're waking up, that really slow, drifty time when you feel like you've started to think and then you realize, no, that's actually not a thought, I'm back in the dream, and you can coast back and forth between waking and sleeping, that's hypnopompia. Liminal dreaming are those two states between waking and sleep, as you're falling asleep and as you're waking up.
Hypnopompy. See, that's a phrase I've never heard before. Okay.
It's not a very well-known phrase, and it kind of blows my mind how unaware people are of hypnopompia, since most of us experience it every day. I mean, everyone does hypnagogia. Not everyone does hypnopompia. If you're the kind of person who like wakes up, and as soon as you wake up, bing, you're wide awake, and you jump out of bed, and you're, you know, as soon as you start working, you're freshest when you begin, and you know, maybe you go to bed early, you wake up early, you know, you're like the party, you're one of the early ones to leave. That means you have a short circadian rhythm or a fast circadian rhythm. And those kinds of people probably don't have a lot of hypnopompia, though they do have hypnagogia. But those of us, and I am one, who sleep in, who stay up late, who really are aware of this experience of that wonderful drifty float in the morning, it's actually my favorite thing of hypnopompia. I mean, at least half the population also goes through it every day, and yet nobody talks about it, nobody knows about it.
Yeah, well, that's the time too, like when if you ever found yourself talking to somebody at that moment and you don't know what you're saying, like I've done that too. Like if I'm staying up late on the phone or I'm falling asleep talking to somebody, and I've been in these weird states where it'll make sense. I'll be talking to that person and then it'll drift off and I'll make sense in to them. And then as I'm drifting off, I start saying something else that makes sense to what I'm thinking about in the dream. And then I catch myself and then I don't make sense to myself either way, you know? And it's like,
yeah,
I don't know what I just said. But it made sense in both realms. Right. So what are the real purposes? Like, what can we do for the hypnagogic state other than just play with it? Have you found like any real, and I love playing with it, don't get me wrong, but have you found anything that could actually help us with, or it enhances things for us? Because I can't stay there very long.
It's just training, honestly. I mean, everything in life is practice. You are what you practice being. Whatever it is you practice, you get good at, whether it's playing the piano or complaining.
Right, you know? Yeah. Gotcha.
Spend a little time playing with it and you'll get really good. I mean, I can stay in it now for hours.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And in the hypnagogic state. That's amazing.
Yeah. Or hypnopompic state as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, playing with it is wonderful. I mean, playing with consciousness is wonderful. But there are so many actual applications. So, for example, it's really great for creativity. Mm-hmm. When you're in hypnagogia or hypnopompia, but hypnagogia is a lot easier to work with because you're going into it. Because your rational mind, you're like the part of the ego that usually drives the ship, you know, what do people think about me? Am I saying something smart? What am I doing? And what do I have to call my mother? That part goes to sleep, but yet you still have waking consciousness. You still are aware of what's happening, but you have access to the unconscious because you're one part awake and you're one part dreaming. And so it's amazing for creativity. And so, for example, Thomas Edison and Salvador Dali, independently of each other, came up with the same exercise.
Are you sure? Because Thomas Edison's well known for ripping people off, especially their inventions. You sure?
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I mean, and you know, yeah, sure, he ripped people off, but he came up with a lot of them, too.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
I understand your objection, but what they would do was they would sit back in an easy chair, and Edison held a ball in each hand, and Dali held, he's very specific, a big brass Spanish key, and on the ground they would put metal plates, so Edison one on each side, Dali just on the one side, and they would sit back when they were feeling sleepy in a big comfy easy chair, and they would drift off into hypnagogia, like go into nap, but just go into the hypnagogic state, not falling off. But once, of course, they started to actually fall asleep, they would let go of either the balls or the key, and they would hit the metal plates and wake them up. And Dali kept a sketch pad and Edison kept a notebook. And Dali would just start sketching, and Edison would write down ideas. If you look through history, the stories of people, often the stories of people using dreams to invent things are hypnagogia. So Paul McCartney came up with yesterday in a hypnagogic state.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. Lots of examples.
So that's where I read that somewhere, but I don't think it was about Thomas Edison. I think it was H.P. Lovecraft or somebody that did the same thing, where they would hold on to something in their chair, like a ball, like you're talking about, and try to hold on to it. That was what would, I mean, is that a good exercise to help keep you in that state? Is that
Absolutely.
How you trained yourself?
A lot of people indeed have taken up similar versions of that practice. And you can do it. It works really well, and you can do it by just holding like a handful of change or a jingly dog toy, or you can even just like lie on your side and raise your arm in the air, and then, you know, as soon as you start to drift off, it'll drop. I have trained myself, I'm well practiced at it, but I have trained myself to talk through hypnagogia, and I have a voice activated recorder. You can buy one for your phone, $3, $5. I don't know what it is. You know, voice activated. So you turn the recorder on, but it only start recording when you start talking. And I'll put it next to my head and go into a hypnagogic state. And then I can talk through it now. I mean, when people are sleep talking, often they're in hypnagogia. And so I can now sort of narrate my experience. That's another good way to learn how to find the state. Because as I say, it's an EEG state that everyone goes through every day. We all have, unlike lucid dreaming, which is fascinating, but also takes, I mean, I've studied it and I've spent a lot of time with lucid dreaming. We can talk about that if you want, but it's hard and it takes a lot of practice. But liminal dreaming, everybody is a natural liminal dreamer. We all go through it every 24 hours. It's only a matter of finding it. And once you found it once, you'll be able to find it again, and then just practice. And it's such an amazing experience.
Man, I want to be able to do this stuff more. Like, you can think about the kind of things that, I mean, I'm not trying to get all sentimental on any of you people out there that have somebody that sleeps next to you at night. But if you have somebody that is willing to experiment with you that way, that's pretty cool too. Like, what kinds of things can you do in hypnagogia? Or, like, you know, one of my favorite things to do is, even if I'm, you know, like going to, like, I used to go to deer camp when, this is what we have in the South. We got this thing called deer camp, but I used to go there and stay awake just so the old guys watch them fall asleep and just see what they would say. Like, people talking in their sleep is something that I'm really, I don't know why I'm so fascinated by it, because I feel like, where did they go? Because they really are not here. They're somewhere else and you don't know who they're talking to, right? And what sucks about all of it is when they come out, you're like, hey, where did you go? Where they don't remember. But you
probably, I remember.
They don't remember none of it. And it happened like a second ago. So, like, you're telling me you went to this other dimension, experienced this stuff that don't even make sense, or it was amazing, and it was just a second ago, and you don't remember it? That boggles me. But I think...
Well, again, it's just attention. What do you pay attention to? You know, if you pay attention to it, you'll get really good at it. So here's another really good use. And I have so many of them, but just what you were just saying reminded me of that. So I had this experience right when I started writing the book, where my aunt, to whom I was extremely close, she was my, you know, she was my godmother. She didn't have any children of her own. She lived with us a lot when I was a kid. She was the first person who taught me how to meditate. She was dying. And I was doing deathbed, you know, sitting by her deathbed and, you know, dealing like, you know, what happens when the person you're taking care of is dying. And after she had left waking consciousness, she never did come back to waking consciousness, but she was, but she would still talk and ramble. And I have spent a lot of time with people in hypnagogia who can talk through their hypnagogia. And I realized that she was in a hypnagogic state and that she was talking through the hypnagogia. So I would ask her questions like, you can converse with people who are in hypnagogic state. It's an orthogonal conversation. It's not like you and I are having a direct conversation. You know, you say something, I say that, we react to each other. You know, she wasn't like that, but it would be like, I'd be like, Robin, what are you doing? And she'd be like, oh, I'm in the shopping mall with Ziggy Stardust and my neighbors and their dogs, and we're looking for clothes. Oh yeah, what are you gonna buy? Oh, but yeah, we decided to go to the cinema. You know, I mean, basically, she was just, you know, rambling. And there was a couple weeks after she had left waking consciousness when I could still talk to her in her hypnagogia before she finally left that too. And I discovered months later that she died in this hospice in Buffalo, New York, run by this doctor named Dr. Christopher Kerr, whose book has just come out. And basically what he discovered from, you know, decades of working with people in hospice is that people who are dying are often in hypnagogia. And families freak out. Like, my family freaked out. They're like, no, Robin, you're not in the shopping mall with Ziggy Stardust, you know, whatever. And it upset them. And I'd be like, just... And so what this doctor says is that people often, families and loved ones often have the person medicated because they say it's delusional. And he was like, yeah, you're robbing people of the last experience that you're having in life, which is hypnagogia. So if this is true, and if you're going to go out of life in a hypnagogic state, that seems like a darn good reason to be practiced at it.
Yeah. Well, because when you want, and I know we got to take a break here, but wouldn't you want to be able to be in that dream state and be aware of your surroundings too? Because I know that's happened before, right? So wouldn't it be cool to be able to do both so that you know people are there by your side, but you also know that you're in a hypnagogia, but you know you're not alone, you know?
That's nice.
Yeah, that would be, that is nice thinking about that. Yeah, so real quick, though, I want to say, too, to the new patrons that signed up before we go to the break, that I really do appreciate you guys. We're getting more and more patrons in there. I think we've got, like, over 30 now. And if you love the show and you want to be a part of it, I've got some really cool, even some extra stuff planned I'm going to do as soon as we get these station things switched over. We're going to do some extra stuff for you guys in there. You guys, let's bring back some old school Lighting the Void. You want to? We'll be right back. More Lighting the Void coming up. Stay with us, guys. Got to hit play. Sorry. There it is. There's some old school Lighting the Void. We'll be right back.
Listen, now is not the time to fear. When your immune system is strong, shields up, you have very little worries. If your immune system is compromised, you're susceptible to all viruses. I say shields up and no fear. Try HeartLove from GetTheTea.com. HeartLove has a special ingredient called allicin. It comes from the healing part of the garlic plant. No garlic breath, no garlic leaking out your pores, just pure immune-building ingredients that gets your shields up. HeartLove is a unique blend of herbs that loves to build you up. Google garlic and know the benefits. One HeartLove pill is equal to 20 cloves of garlic. 20 cloves! Shields up. You've heard of our Life Change Cleansing Tea at GetTheTea.com. Now try HeartLove. And by the way, take your blood pressure and watch weekly what happens. So here's how to purchase. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. And build your shields. That's GetTheTea.com. Mention Ray in the coupon code and hit apply and receive free shipping. Hi, folks. It's troubling times and fear is pushing emotions, which in turn pushes health the wrong direction. Do you ever get an ache because life is uneasy? Try Life Change.
Have you ever seen an ad or banner which brought you a feeling that someone is reading your mind or even listening to your conversations? Your online data is being used against you. Surfshark is a VPN service that makes online privacy protection easy and attainable. You can use it on as many devices as you'd like simultaneously. The VPN service that we use at UFO Seekers plus 1 month free for $1.99 a month. Visit surfshark.deals/seekers. We spend almost as much time online as sleeping. That's 6 to 8 hours a day. The internet knows a lot about us, and that's why we should care about our online data. Use Surfshark to encrypt your personal information and send it via a secure VPN tunnel so that no one can see it without your permission. Visit surfshark.deals/seekers. You need to protect yourself from surveillance and targeted advertising. Surfshark encrypts all internet traffic sent to and from your devices and ensures that your IP address remains hidden. The VPN service that we use at UFO Seekers plus 1 month free for $1.99 a month. Visit surfshark.deals/seekers.
The Secret Teachings is the middle ground between the mainstream and alternative, between the official story and clickbait conspiracy. It lies between man's lack of critical thinking and his acknowledgement of discovering the patterns of nature. This is a radio show of objective analysis from the occult to pop conspiracy and health. A show we call The Secret Teachings. You can catch the broadcast Monday through Friday on The Fringe FM, TheFringe.fm, and www.thesecretteachings.info.
All right, welcome back to Lighting the Void. Jennifer Dumpert's here with us. I'm going to play a lot of like old school stuff. I'm going to try to tonight. Maybe we'll do a Lighting the Void throwback week where we play all of the old tracks that we used to play, even some of the old intros. I try to bring it back. You know, I was playing around with the new players last night. I woke up in the middle of the night and couldn't even, I couldn't sleep. And so the new players that we have, they're really cool. They got the players on there, but there's also an option to do live video. So you got the players and the live video. So I was playing around with that, started playing some old school tracks, and I figured, man, we might just play with these this week. So yeah, that's why we're doing that. So we got something to look forward to for the live show. So Jennifer, before the break, we were talking about some of your experiences with this, and you were speaking about death, about how some people go into hypnagogia. Or that, now, is that everyone? Before I say what I'm going to say next, do they say everybody does that, or at least that's what they're thinking, that everybody goes into that when they die? or before they're about to die?
You know, people die with extremely varying states of consciousness. I mean, some people are just completely out of it. You know, some people are on the edge. Some people are, you know, but definitely a lot of people.
Well,
you know,
have you seen, there's this movie called Waking Life. Have you seen it? It's like an animated movie. Yeah. Huh?
Richard Linklater.
Yeah, you've seen it then, right? So, okay. All right. So that movie trips me out. We actually watched it with some of the listeners together. And I've had what's called where you get trapped in a dream, right? Like he was getting trapped.
Oh, sleep paralysis.
Yeah, it's not like sleep paralysis when your body's trapped. But this is more like when you're in a dream and then you wake up and you think you're awake, but you're not.
False awakenings.
That's it. False awakenings. Why am I not, like, I used to know the phrases for anything. Anyway, watching that movie where he keeps doing that, and then he's talking to the people in his dream, like, maybe I'm dead, you know? Like, towards the end of it, he starts thinking, maybe I'm dead because I'm just not waking up and everything's kind of freaky and not real to me. Well, I've had that experience, like, and I'm sure we all have. And I can't, like, I would rather have hypnagogia than a false awakening before death. That would just be too trippy to me. You know what I'm saying?
False awakenings, however, are mostly things that do happen in liminal dream states. And, you know, in waking life, those are all people that he knew. Those are all real people. Like, all of those stories are all, like, you know, Richard Linklater's, I mean, I know him. And he's, my spouse has worked with him.
Really?
And he's a champion dreamer, and he's really interested in dreams. And all of the people who are in that movie telling their stories are actually people from real life who he met.
Well, and he knows a lot of celebrities, because there's a lot of celebrities in that movie.
He knows a lot of celebrities.
Yeah.
Indeed, he does.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
But False Awakenings are super trippy, and, you know, false awakenings and sleep paralysis. I mean, they can, I mean, false awakenings are almost always hypnagogic or hypnopompic experiences, you know, where you, and, you know, often, sometimes they're cool, but they're often frightening. That's one of the reasons that sleep paralysis and false awakenings are kind of attached, you know, because again, what's happening when you're in liminal dream states, hypnagogia or hypnopompia, is you're simultaneously awake and asleep. And some of the things that happen is either you're in some, because you haven't had enough sleep, but for other reasons too, REM, so dream state, breaks through another one of the EEG states so that you're, you know, you're like, oh, you know, I'm in deep sleep, and suddenly REM breaks through. Or you go, because you go from REM in the normal course of a night, REM, which is, of course, the dream sleep that we all know about, the ones that have the big, long stories where I'm me and I'm, you know, whatever, I can fly over this, you know, crazy landscape that never existed. So REM tends to go into hypnagogia. And when you're in REM, your body is flooded by all these chemicals, acetylcholine, a bunch of other chemicals that paralyze you so that you don't act out your dreams. Don't talk, don't walk, don't move around. And so one thing that can happen is you can move into the liminal dream state where you're partially awake, but but you do it too quickly and your body is still paralyzed. So, you know, those dreams where you're trying to run or scream and you can't. So a lot of things can happen that lead to these states. I mean, that's a physical science explanation. And I tend to think those are only one side of the coin, but hearing those explanations does help understand what's happening. So false awakenings are often just, you know, you're getting shunted into a liminal dream experience. You're like, oh, I'm awake. Oh, no, I'm not awake. Oh, I'm awake.
Yeah, and weird stuff happens too. Like, I was actually trying to have an out-of-body experience. So I was sleeping on the couch. And when I wake up, it's just natural for me to grab my phone and look at it. I don't know why. We live in our phones. Don't judge me. You do too, most of you. But, like, I would pick up my phone and I would hit the screen. And the screen would blink on and just go, and then blink out. I'm like, what the hell? And so I got up and started walking around, and I was like, oh man, I'm dreaming. This ain't real, you know? So I laid back down on the couch and then woke up again. Same thing. Picked up my phone. I'm like, I'm still in the dream. I did that like five times. But the weird thing is the moment, or I guess you could say the level right before awakening, there was like this entity or being hovered over me. And it was once that thing moved away from me, then I could wake up. And so I got this weird eccentric notion in my head that was some kind of entity trapping me there, or it could just be something in my mind. You never know.
Well, you know, that's one of the most common experiences. So people who have sleep paralysis very frequently have an entity, and most cultures have a name for it, right? So we tend to say succubus, incubus, or the old hag. But in like Hawaii, it's the night marchers, and if you meet their eyes, you'll die. Or in a lot of Asian countries, it's a ghost or an unappeased ancestor. Or in Italy, it's this weird little like gnome figure. There's like the one that will sit on your chest and suffocate you. Like most cultures have some sort of mythic name for this entity who shows up while you're in the sleep paralysis hypnagogic phase. And it's usually malicious. For most people, it's scary. Although that one of the great ways to work with that, actually, one of the great ways to work with fear, about 8% of the population has regular sleep paralysis or false awakenings. About half of us at least have the experience once. Almost 10% of people have it often. And for those people, you know, it's often a lot of terror. But one of the great ways to work with it is to learn this kind of like conscious dreaming and it's one of the things I do, like with lucid dreaming, they work with soldiers with PTSD or whatever, and just teach you to, when you're having these nightmares or having experiences, go and approach them. Go and approach the entity.
Really?
I worked with a guy for years who had this terrifying sleep paralysis, and he finally decided at one point to just march up. It was the same like monster. He would be stuck in sleep paralysis, and then there this scary malevolent being in his dreams. And finally, in one of the dreams, he marched up to the malevolent being and said, "What do you want?" And the malevolent being said, "Oh, you know, I've been trying to get your attention for years. There's an old wise man over here who wants to impart some knowledge, you know." And then that was it, and the dream changed, you know. So I mean, it can be pretty interesting. But anyway, that's where those things happen. I mean, again, it's liminal. It's the sort of the spaces between life, death, conscious, unconscious.
Man, I can't even fathom. Everybody always says that to me, and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense, right? Like, go up to the being and be cool with it and figure out what's going on. And Thomas Campbell told me the same thing, but I got to tell you, it's easier said than done, especially.
It's easier said than done. I hear you. That's true.
But you're saying that you've broke through those kind of things. I imagine you, as for someone that does it as much as you, probably has took on some challenges, right?
Yeah, you know, I, although it's super unusual for me to have an unpleasant dream. Actually, for the first 6 weeks of this COVID quarantine thing, I had more bad dreams than I'd had in probably 15 years.
Yeah, yeah. A friend of mine had that happen too. Like, they kept having really bad dreams. But that just means, doesn't that mean, don't you think that we're all connected? Doesn't that kind of prove that we're connected? Or was it just, I don't know, because I think like on a conscious level, we can tell ourselves, oh, everything's fine. It's going to be fine. But like deep down, we don't really feel that. And our dreams represent the deep down.
Yeah, totally. You know, deep down, we don't feel it. And even if you're on the surface saying, no, this is cool, this is okay, you know, the things that really scare you are going to manifest, you know, and a lot of people do have, I mean, hypnagogia and hypnagogia specifically, but also hypnopompia can be scary or can be dark, you know, for some people. And when people say to me, you know, well, you know, I read your book and I got interested in exploring, or I attended one of your workshops or whatever it was, and I got interested in exploring these little dream spaces, but a lot of what happens for me in there is frightening, which is true for some people. And I'm like, well, then that's, you know, then that's your work. You know, if what's just below the surface of your unconscious is a fear or a darkness, then that's the work that you have to do, is to go and deal with that thing and face that thing. And you're right, way easier said than done. But that, you know, that's, if you want to have an encounter with yourself, a deep encounter with your deep inner self, when the ego, who is the one who helps you, you know, deal with the world by creating this persona and driving it or whatever. If you want to have a deep encounter with the unconscious that's beyond, you know, what that personality is, this is where you do it.
Yeah, that's what Carl Jung thought too. And, you know, he thought, well, let's say you have a problem with, I don't know, being bullied or something, or you have a problem standing up for yourself. And, you know, like your parents or your friends, they'll tell you, stand up for yourself, whatever, but you just can't do it. Well, he thought about this. He said, well, if you use your dreams first, which is something you can do, and like make a character in your mind and focus that state to where that character represents you being bullied, and then you go into like this downward or dream state, and in these realms, you really take on this thing and you beat it or whatever, somehow or another, in real life, it kind of triggers something that will get you to stand up for yourself. It's amazing how it works, you know?
Absolutely. And actually, another great way to work with hypnagogia comes from Jung. It's called active imagination. So you probably know this because you clearly know about Jung. Yeah. But what, you know, Jung and Freud, when they first met, were, you know, like they famously talked for 8 hours straight when they first met. And Jung was Freud's star student. Freud referred to Jung as my son, the star, and, you know, Freud really thought that Jung was going to take over. He was, you know, and then they had a huge falling out
about the Oedipus theory, right? That's what it was about.
They had this huge falling out, after which Jung went through what he called a psychotic break. Like, he felt like he had completely, you know, everything that he, all of the approval, everything he was doing. So he completely fell apart. And the way that he found out of it, and a mode of therapy that he then said that he thought was enough for anyone to heal themselves from psychological, you know, damage, trauma, upset, whatever, was the thing that he called active imagination. And the way that active imagination works is, you go into a hypnagogic state and you see what shows up there. Again, because hypnagogia is this kaleidoscopic tour through your own memories and associations and thoughts and imaginings, right? Because hypnagogia is this swirl through your own unconscious, what you would do is you go into your unconscious, you go into a hypnagogic state, so you still have enough waking mind to remember what's happening there, but yet you're in your unconscious. And so you go in there and you take whatever shows up, images or associations, that kind of thing. And then as you just dabble in hypnagogia, and like what Edison and Dolly were doing, you come out of it before you fall asleep. And then what Jung said is, then you engage with it creatively. So paint or work with clay or choreograph a dance. I bead shoes. I like to decorate my shoes with beads and, you know, whatever it is. And you keep going into the hypnagogic space and coming out of it again and continuing to work on your piece. And you might be done in a day, and you might be done in a week, and you might be done in a year. And the point is not to produce like gallery quality art. The point is to creatively engage your unconscious. And Jung thought that active imagination was enough, that actually active imagination was as much therapy as you needed. And I don't know if you've ever seen Jung's Red Book.
But yeah, I'll have the reader's edition, yeah.
That's the result of active imagination. That's the result of this practice.
Okay.
Those papers.
Yeah, see, that was the part of the book I didn't understand, because there was all this introduction. And you know the black books are out, too. Have you heard about that?
Uh-huh, I've seen them.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? Like, I don't even know if, I don't even know if we should be messing with them. You know, I don't know. Like, because that was his personal stuff, and I think they had to go over a lot with themselves to figure out, well, is it worth it? Like, should we do this? Did he really want this stuff out? And, I mean, I'm going to read it. I mean, I don't know about you, I'm going to read it.
I have one of my best friends is the person who does the arts at the University of California in Santa Barbara. And a year and a half ago or so, they did a show of all of Jung's art. And so I got to go when no one else was there. And they had like the red book, and they had black books, and they had a whole bunch of his other stuff too. I mean, he was a very prolific painter and carver. His woodworking was astounding. And the thing is, I mean, at this point, I spend so much time in liminal dream space and hypnagogia and hypnopompia that, it is a psychedelic experience, you know, like, you know, things of my youth. And I walked into that Jung exhibit, and I looked around and I was like, wow, this guy was a hypnagogia tripper for sure. I mean, his art is so cool and weird. But like I say, like he, you know, for him, he felt like just this creative engagement with one's own unconscious accessed through hypnagogia was you would learn enough about yourself and also learn to be comfortable and maybe even love your unconscious, and that was wonderful for mental healing.
Yeah, right. Well, I wonder if I've had problems doing that active imagination thing though. Like Gordon White has a course on it. He calls it journeying, where you use active imagination, and I don't know, for some reason I just can't stay focused on it. My mind is like doing so many things, and I know the idea is to kind of let go and then just use your imagination and let things come as they are, but it's still hard for me to do. Like I think maybe I got ADD or something. Like what I'm saying is, do you think meditation, like a meditative practice, will help along with this?
For sure. I mean, anything that you can do to calm body and mind will help with it. I mean, if you're a place to start that's, you know, on the easier side is just when you're going to sleep, try to, you know, remember to spend some time exploring these spaces. You know, try to not fall asleep immediately. You can use yoga nidra. I can happen to tell you a little bit more about yoga nidra. I mean, and you can also, forgive for the plug, but you can also go to liminaldreaming.com and click on the practices and tab, and there's some guided meditations. So when you're feeling sleepy, you can try those. When you're going to sleep at night, you can try this. You can, you know, you can do it during a nap, you know, in late afternoon, in the evening, when you're feeling sleepy, take a nap on the couch. And instead of thinking about sleep, think about, you know, well, how do I find the liminal dream space? You know, and just explore that. I mean, and it's fine to move slowly. It's fine if it takes a couple months, you know. But like I say, everybody naturally goes through these states. It's just a matter of paying attention and learning to catch it when it happens. And once you learn to catch it when it happens, then you know how to do it, and it's a lot easier.
Right on. Yeah.
Then you can do all these other things. Here's another one. Out-of-body experiences. You mentioned those earlier.
Uh-huh.
So Bob Monroe, who coined the phrase out-of-body experience, the Robert Monroe Institute, Bob Monroe said that the best way to achieve an out-of-body experience was to learn to be to gain facility basically with hypnagogia. He said that hypnagogia was the launching point for out-of-body experiences. So you learn how to have a certain amount of awareness in hypnagogia. Basically, you just learn how to recognize hypnagogia and then spend a little bit of time there. And then once you can do that, once you can recognize hypnagogia, then you can start the out-of-body experiences that they teach at the Bob Monroe Institute.
Ah, that makes sense. That really does make sense, because it took a long... I did the Gateway experience, and it took a long time for me to get to a just focus 10. And I feel like now that you're saying that, if I would have got to, if I would have done that, I would have gotten to focus 10 a lot easier, because there is a certain relaxation and focus that you have to get to that point. All right. Exactly. Well, here's what I want to do. I want to go ahead. We're at the top of the hour, but when we come back, I'd really like to talk to you about some of the things that you've personally experienced. I'm sure you've had some amazing experiences in these dream states. Maybe you could tell us a story about something that you really saw or something that you experienced, because I'm curious about that. I would love to hear about it. Right. All right, so we'll be right back. More coming up, more Lighting the Void. Stay tuned with us. And more old school music for you.
Joseph Roop is your host. Pull back the blinds and uncover the truth. This is Lighting the Void Radio.
This portion of the show is being brought to you by The Best Things in Life, which are still free with minimum purchase at participating dealers.
The night is young, so turn up the heat with your host, Joe Roop, on Lighting the Void on The Fringe FM.
Listening to Lighting the Void Radio.
Howdy, this is Catalina, and you're listening to Lighting the Void with Joe Roop.
Folks, this is very important information. What's to be said about CBD? AncientLifeOil.com. Our CBD is made from hemp and has 0.003 THC, which means this wonderful product won't get you high, no matter what amount you take. What does CBD do for the body? My hands are tied, but you can Google CBD benefits and be astounded. When you're finished reading, you'll want to log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. And purchase. Life is good when you feel good. People are tired of pain. People are asking for non-GMO organic products to help them with, you fill in the blank. Legal in 49 states, and again, our CBD is made from hemp. Ancient Life Oil is about helping people, one by one by one. If you wonder how good the product is, the CEO takes it every day without miss. AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Have a great day.
We all have that story to tell in our lives. The winds were howling, the ground shook, you could hear rushing water, and then history repeats itself. When there's no power, refrigeration fails, stores with their shelves stripped bare, ATMs can't operate, deliveries stop, then what? These events can last days or weeks. You need a plan. In statements made during recent interviews, FEMA Administrator Brock Long has repeatedly urged all Americans to understand three truths. FEMA is broke, the system is broken. If this is the new normal, Americans can't rely on federal cavalry when disaster strikes. Don't get caught out in the elements empty-handed. Prepare with us by going to preparewiththefringe.com and get your two-week food supply, 92 servings, 8 food varieties with 25-year shelf life. Normally $137, now only $75. Or get a month's supply, normally $247, now only $147, shipped in one business day. Just go to preparewiththefringe.com or call 888-440-7931. 7931. That's 888-440-7931. Get this great offer and be prepared while it lasts.
Permanent industrial glue impossible to remove? Not anymore, because Handyman Formula by D-Bond is a patented chemical adhesive remover. It's used in the building and home maintenance industry, but now it's available for your home use, for your DIY projects. Unglue stickers, silicone rubber, labels, price tags, flex tape, weather stripping, carpet glue, wood glue, liquid nails, even 3M5200, and it dissolves graffiti. Yeah, graffiti. Handyman Formula by D-Bond works, and it's safe to use on most surfaces. No need to call a professional. Don't get out the pliers and blowtorch. Just apply a little Handyman Formula by D-Bond and wait 90 seconds, then quickly and easily pull the items apart. Get unstuck. Visit DBondHandymanFormula.com. That's DBondHandymanFormula.com or call 561-575-4200. Handyman Formula by D-Bond.
The Liberator Rocket Heater will heat your home for free. The highly efficient Liberator Rocket Heater has no moving parts. It's safe and strong, constructed of quarter-inch steel. So like all things made in the USA, it's built to last. Uses any kind of wood, sticks, even scrap in its gravity-fed firebox. And it heats workshops, homes, garages, outbuildings, industrial areas, and barns. Watch the video of this blast furnace stove in action. Visit rocketheater.com. That's rocketheater.com.
Yohoy there. It's Gigi from Shift Happens, and you're shaking some conversational tail feather to the Fringe FM.
Paranormal News, I'm Brad Bernards. According to the Daily Record, some of the weirdest records relate to the Stargate program, a secret U.S. Army unit established in 1978 at Fort Meade, Maryland, by the Defense Intelligence Agency and contractor SRI International to investigate the potential for psychic phenomena in military and domestic intelligence applications, as reported by Sputnik News. Also included is a 1964 report by the National Investigations Committee on aerial phenomena that included retired armed services chiefs. The file goes on to recommend increasing attempts to communicate with aliens and drafting special laws to govern how humans interact with ET. Stone tools unearthed in a cave in Mexico indicate that humans could have lived in the area as early as about 33,000 years ago, researchers report online July 22nd in Nature, according to Science News. That's more than 10,000 years before humans are generally thought to have settled North America. For decades, archaeologists thought the Americas' first residents were the Clovis people, big game hunters known for their well-crafted spear points, who crossed a land bridge from Asia to Alaska about 13,000 years ago. Recent, well-accepted archaeological discoveries suggest that North America's first settlers actually arrived a few thousand years before the rise of the Clovis culture, by about 16,000 years ago, says Vance Holliday, an archaeologist at the University of Arizona in Tucson, not involved in the new work. If the new finds really are human tools, Holliday says, this would be the oldest evidence for a human-inhabited site anywhere in the Americas. Connect with the news at ParaabnormalRadio.com. I'm Brad Bernards, Parabnormal News.
The Secret Teachings is the middle ground between the mainstream and alternative, between the official story and clickbait conspiracy. It lies between man's lack of critical thinking and his acknowledgement of discovering the patterns of nature. This is a radio show of objective analysis, from the occult to pop conspiracy and health. A show we call The Secret Teachings. You can catch the broadcast Monday through Friday on The Fringe FM, TheFringe.fm, and www.thesecretteachings.info.
Houston, 20 seconds to LOST Dress.
All right, welcome back to Lighting the Void. You are listening to The Fringe FM, KTLK Digital Broadcasting. The website is thefringe.fm. And we got a lot of new stuff coming. I hope you guys have been over to the website and checked out the new website. We're there. You can sign up and become an outsider totally for free. And that is our new newsletter, where it's not just any old newsletter where you get your email box spammed with junk all the time. You're going to get all kinds of tips, tricks, magical stuff, what's new, all the inside information and specialized content. So go sign up for free at thefringe.fm. The forum, it'll just pop out there and you can just sign up for free. Also, thanks to the patrons and to all of you guys in the Fringe FM chat at thefringe.fm/chatroom if you want to join our Discord server. And if you want to call into the show at any point in time, you can at 1-800-588-0335. That is the call-in number. I hope you guys have saved it in your phones. And if you haven't, well, shame on you. Our guest tonight is Jennifer Dumfert. And the website is urbandreamscape.com, also liminaldreaming.com. And for those that have just tuned in, because I see a few people have tuned in, can you explain what liminal dreaming is just one more time for us?
Liminal dreaming are the dreams that happen between waking and sleep. Hypnagogia, as you're falling asleep. Hypnopompia, as you're waking up. And there are those weird half-dream hallucinatory states where you maybe see like a kaleidoscopic swirl of your own memories, dreams, associations, or maybe you hear some sound or you see faces turning toward you. It's one of the 7 or 8 EEG states that we all experience every day. So everybody goes through liminal dreaming at least once in a 24-hour state. When your arm jerks, your leg jerks, you know you're in liminal dreaming, and it's basically you're both dreaming in the unconscious, and yet you have enough waking consciousness available to observe the circumstance and maybe remember it.
Yeah. Well, I think that is a very familiar concept that we talk about on this show quite a bit. And it's cool to me that all this stuff has names. I just don't know all the terms for everything. And you've got quite a few terms. Like, I'm going to practice this term. I can't say it. Oneironauticum. Yeah. Like I'm just going to stay up all night tonight and say oneironauticum and just keep saying it.
So many interviewers curse me for that name.
Yeah. Like, what is that? Right. But it's a cool word. It sounds like the name of some type of 80s rave rock band too, though. Oneironauticum.
Known it was going to be a thing that other people would be involved in, I would have come up with an easier name.
Well, so when you're exploring these dream worlds, has there ever been a time where you did meet certain like entities or whatever, even in a lucid state, and you thought, well, this is actually real, I'm talking to somebody else besides me in my own consciousness? Have you ever thought
earlier in the show I said that the strangest, you know, unexplainable thing that has ever happened to me, and it's a common one, where people have beloveds who have just died visit them in their dreams and tell them that they have just died, or right after they die they visit them in their dreams. This is a pretty frequent story that you hear from people. And when I was 21, and I was the same, spoken to you earlier about when I was living in Europe, I was, and this was before cell phones or email or whatever, and I was in London, and I went and I fell asleep on the lawn of a big park. And in my sleep, in my dream, my cat, Webster, and I was gone for like 10 months, you know, my cat came to me and said, well, I'm dying, so I've come to say goodbye to you. You know, we had a conversation, it was a whole thing, but he really did die. And this was across the ocean, you know. I mean, I was from Buffalo, New York. That's where he was. He was in Buffalo, New York, and I was in London. And I had no way of, I mean, I hadn't spoken to my family or parents for weeks because, you know, back in the 80s, which is when this was, you couldn't really, you know, it wasn't easy to make calls or whatever. So that was a very strange experience, for sure. I don't know what to make of it. Yeah.
So is your cat, like, speaking English to you?
Yeah, he was speaking English to me. It was more of like a psychic communication. And I assure you, I spent a lot of time with this cat. And we got pretty good at, you know, this was my childhood cat. You know, I got him when I was like 10, you know, or 8 or something like that. And we got pretty good at communicating. So I kind of understood him anyway. But people do have, you know, strange dream experiences. And, you know, there's a lot of experiences that are, I think that we almost do them a disservice by attempting to explain them in some way that makes sense in the framework that we have in our waking world, because the framework that we have in our waking world is one of only many frameworks that we have. And one of the things that people who, like, in my youth, you know, I had a relationship with psychedelic drugs, and then, like, you know, later in life, I get into this liminal dreaming, and or people who, you know, do out of body experiences or whatever. There's all sorts of experiences that we have where you realize that the waking rational conscious mind is only one of the many states that we experience. You know, and so anybody who's aware of this, I feel, you know, can say, well, you know, to try to explain this experience or translate this experience into this mind doesn't necessarily make sense. The language isn't going to work so well. I mean, you can kind of explain it a little bit, but it's a different experience.
Yeah, it is. That is crazy. I want to be able to, what could you tell people to do? The most frustrating thing to me is, like, this morning I woke up and I was like, man, I know I dreamed about some cool stuff, and I still have the feeling of the dream and some of the pictures and everything. I just want to remember it. Do you ever get like super nostalgic, good feeling in a dream, almost so good that you want to go back to it? But what really sucks is like when you can't remember it. You just can't remember it. And what would you tell folks that feel that? Like, how do they, what could they do to help remember more?
So it depends to a certain degree on your circadian rhythm. And I talked about this a little bit earlier on the show. So if you're the kind of person who has a fast circadian rhythm, something called a lark. So basically you fall asleep, you go to sleep early. As soon as you wake up, this is the big point. As soon as you wake up, bing, you're wide awake. You jump out of bed, ready for the day. Whatever your work is, as soon as you start working and you're freshest is when you're best. You know, you probably are like one of the first people to be ready to leave the party. If that's you, and that's just circadian rhythm, and we inherit that, right? You can change them, like people who work night shifts or have, you know, tiny children, you know, have babies. You can shift it, but basically you inherit it. So if that's you, then no matter what, you're going to have a hard time remembering your dreams because you wake up too fast. So if that description sounded like you, anybody listening, that means you have a very fast circadian rhythm, and you're going to have a really hard time remembering your REM dreams, the dreams from the middle of the night. And if that's the case and you're interested in working with dreams, hypnagogia is the state for you. And if my description of you with your fast circadian rhythm resonated, then you probably also, if you've been listening to the show and I've been talking about hypnagogia, as you're drifting off to sleep and you have those alien radio stations or the sounds or faces turning toward you or those hallucinatory dreams, you probably were nodding your head, because people who have really short, fast circadian rhythms tend to actually have hypnagogic dreams. So if that's you, then the way that you remember dreams is by working with hypnagogia. So you can go to liminaldreaming.com and you can see some practices. You can buy the book, of course. You can do things like nap in public, or nap with a voice-activated recorder, or use the Edison Dali exercise I talked about, and then you will actually have a much deeper relationship with dreams than you normally have. If you're not that person, if you're not like the fast circadian rhythm, but you're still not remembering your dreams, there's a lot of things you can do. Try to wake up really, really, really slowly. Keep a dream journal. Find a friend with whom to talk about your dreams. Whatever it is you pay attention to is whatever you're going to get better at, always. Sleep with a voice-activated recorder. You can buy them for $3, $5, not that much, for your phone. Keep it next to you in bed all night long. And in the morning, make sure you keep it plugged in. And in the morning, as you're just starting to surface from the dream, you don't even have to reach over to grab a pen or paper. Just start talking into the voice-activated recorder. Then it will record your dream. And that takes very little practice to get good at. Beware, if you snore or you have an animal friend, you might just end up with an hour of like, meow, meow, you know, but, you know, otherwise it's a great way to learn to become good at hypnopompia, the morning state of liminal dreaming. And then from there, it becomes a lot easier to remember your REM dreams, because your transition from REM into waking, you're better at, like you're more conscious. You know, it's just like learning to be more conscious when you're driving. Like you're trying to learn to be a better driver. You're like, well, I'm going to be more conscious when I'm driving. It's just the same thing, but learning how to do that in that state in between waking and sleep.
Okay. That's the same thing kind of like Robert Bruce says about the out-of-body experience and stuff. So it's really all about remembering everything, just trying to stay focused and remember everything. How long did it take you to get to that point, though, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't at all. So liminal dreaming has been my primary practice, and I use it like a meditation practice. That's another one of the many advantages, as we were talking about them. Probably for about 5 years. And I would say, I mean, from the time that I first, again, I had a watershed dream, from the time that I first had a hypnagogic dream. You know, I already had been working in the field of dreams, running the O'Neill-Nauticum for, you know, 6 years or so, and, you know, speaking and writing and lecturing about dreams for 15 or 20 years or so. I had a hypnagogic dream, I guess about 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, something like that, where I was like, I came out of the dream and I was like, wait a minute, what? This happens to me, these weird dreams between waking and sleep. Like my body can fall asleep before my mind does. You can learn to do that. You can learn to have your body fall asleep and your mind is still awake. And usually it'll fall asleep pretty quickly after. So it was so I had that experience. I had that dream and I came out of it going like, wait a minute. You know, I've been studying lucid dreaming. I've been running the O'Neill-Nauticum. I'm doing, what is this dream state? This is now my primary interest. Between that and the next 6 months, I got a lot better at it. Between that and the time when I could reliably talk through a hypnagogic dream and narrate what was happening was probably about a year and a half. And then now I can actually sit with a laptop in my lap and my fingers on the keys, and I can go into a hypnagogic dream because I can touch type, I'm a writer, and I can actually type out what's happening in my dream. So that was about 2.5 years.
Wow, that's cool. And I think anything you dedicate your time and practice to, though, it'll work. But I honestly believe that consciousness exploration is what's going to get us through all this stuff. I mean, what else can you do? Do what?
I could not agree more.
Yeah. So I mean, what else can we do? Like, we've depended on all the systems. We depended on everything. Everything's let us down. Right. So it's time that like we go inward. There's a whole realm of stuff there, a whole realization of who we really are and what we're capable of. And you know, questions that need answering. I don't think we're going to get them from government systems or, I guess, humans and life in general. It's when we're all willing to look at each other, I feel like, and say, you know what? I don't think any of us know what's really going on. I mean, we're trying to figure this out, but let's do some dream exploration. Let's explore consciousness, because it's the one thing that does give us answers sometimes, and it's the one thing that not only gives us answers, but it grows us spiritually and emotionally, and we've learned that we can use things that Jung has talked about to fix problems, and maybe the answer isn't out there in space trying to find dark matter. And, you know, every time they find another smaller particle, they find another one. Maybe the answer is inside of us. I mean, isn't that what the double slit is showing us? Like, this is, we're creating all this anyways. Creating and observing, you know?
Nice and sad.
I feel like that's what we need to do. Because if we really are. Go ahead.
And especially now when we can't really go outward. I mean, the way the world is now, it's really time to go inward.
You know, it was funny. When I was talking to Thomas Campbell, he was on his, a NASA physicist. You know who he is, right? He wrote My Big Toe. So he was saying, like, we go out in space and explore these other planets and look at stuff that's on there. But I think he's kind of figured out that there's nothing out there. Like, he even said that to me on the show. He's like, we think there's aliens out there, or life forms that are like us, but probably these ships that we're seeing and stuff are just, you know, people that have figured out that we're all in this conscious simulator, and they figured out how to move around in it, and there's nothing really out there but just rocks and gas and stars and more rocks and gas and stars. I was like, what? How could a NASA physicist tell me something like that? But he's kind of figured out too that all of the answers and all of the good stuff is inside you, you know.
Consciousness is a remarkable thing, and the world that is inside of us is way vaster than the world that is outside of us, because it really has no edge or limit. Here's another good thing. You're talking about, like, what would you want to do with liminal dreaming? So I've been giving you very practical answers, because I am often called upon for practical answers. But when you start to get into the consciousness exploration stuff, and that's mostly what I'm doing, and that's where it gets super fascinating and weird. So, for example, have you ever had a dream that runs on two tracks at once, like you're having two dreams at the same time? That's a skill that I learned, but with liminal dreaming, I realized that I can have multiple tracks of dreams happening at the same time. And so at this point, I'm up to six. If I'm really practiced, I can get six going. And basically, so I'm simultaneously in these six different worlds, and there I can zoom into them with incredible detail or pull out, you know, from a distance. And they're all, the first time this really happened super intensely, I was in a yoga nidra training, and I'd been doing it for about a week. And I had, simultaneously, I was like flying into this sci-fi world that was like a wash of blues and purples, but architecture that couldn't possibly exist, but it did in a dream. And I was flying above it, and I could see it from a distance, but I could also zoom in and see like a particular minaret that looked like melted wax that was moving and shifting. At the same time, I was in a dream where I was on my grandparents' lawn, thumbing through a rack of 70s satanic records, like LPs, and looking at the covers. You know, and I could tell you what, like, they're looking at, like, this great detail, but pulling out to the experience. And then simultaneously, I was watching through the sort of void of space this bird made of glitter and flapping its wings and flying through space. But it was like individual pieces of glitter, but all moving together like a murmuration, which is one of those flocks of birds that looks like a bird. And one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And so simultaneously, I'm in these three different places having these three different experiences. And so my mind can have three experiences at once. It gets pretty weird.
Three different dreams at once. Now that's talent, right?
Well, it's practice. Everything is just practice.
That's pretty good, though. If I've ever done anything like that, there's no way I could remember it, actually. So, but yeah, that is pretty rad that you can do that. Imagine if we could do that in real life. I mean, I'm all for multitasking, but that would be really cool. you know, when people talk to you about the out-of-body experience, do you feel like, I have to ask this question to everybody that talks about this when they come on, do you feel like that they are two different things, or they're just a part of the same realm as far as dreaming or the out-of-body experience? I can't say that I think I know. Some
experiences are very weird and different. And I think we tend to want to define them or say, well, it's different in some form of objective reality, except that when you get deep enough into the experiences, you start to learn that this idea of purely objective reality doesn't exist, right? I mean, we're all co-creating this world simultaneously. And so the idea that there's some sort of objective reality that exists outside of you or me or our interaction or whatever it is already pretty problematic. So to say, do I think it's actually objectively some sort of different realm here or there? I'm like, I feel like I don't have really the information that would let me answer that question. And I also feel like it's kind of a slippery slope. Reality is a bit more of a slippery slope, I think, than we tend to think it is. And that's one of the things that happens when you start to explore these other states, is you start to realize that it's like there's a feedback loop between you and not you that is you're simultaneously creating both you and what's around you. So I don't know.
What's between you and not you?
Yeah,
that's like what that's like what Richard Allen Miller calls into the out of, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty trippy. Like,
you know, so like there's a sound I hear, like so a bell rings over there, and it creates these sound waves that move through space, and they enter into my ear, and there's these physical little hairs, whatever, that translate what that is. And then my mind, with its memories and associations and patterns, says that was a bell ringing. So where can you say that sound happened? Did it happen at the bell? Did it happen in the air? Did it happen in my ear? Did it happen in my mind?
Oh, no.
I mean, in fact, feedback loop.
God, that's trippy. My eyes just won't cross thinking about it. All right.
Yeah.
Last break of the night. We're here with Jennifer Dumpert. If you got any questions, I'll get to them in the chat as well. You can call in at 1-800-588-0335. Stay tuned for a little bit more of Lighting the Void coming up. Stay with us.
Clyde Lewis. You are listening to The Fringe FM.
When you're in the house for longer periods of time, you can see them flying or running across the floor. Ooh, yuck. They're unhealthy, gross, and disgusting. Bugs. I loathe bugs. We keep a clean home, but occasionally bugs show up. Well, I found something that is tougher than bugs. Orange Guard. On contact, it kills hidden bugs, including ants, roaches, and fleas. Plus, Orange Guard is a residual repellent. All of the ingredients of Orange Guard are on the FDA generally recognized as safe list. Orange Guard may be used around food, humans, and pets. It comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Orange Guard. Available at orangeguard.com, Whole Foods, and Ace Hardware.
The truth is out there.
There's something out here.
And so are we. KTOK Digital Broadcasting, The Fringe FM.
I'm J.D. Lewis, and you'll be listening to me, the host. No, that's wrong, because I'm not a host, I'm a hostess. I'm like a cupcake. Yeah, I get it. I do the show called Real Talk on The Fringe FM. Well, I'll be going live this Wednesday, April 15th, from 7 to 9 Pacific time in the evening. Do you hear that noise in the background? That's my dishwasher. It's like a high hum. It's because I do this stuff out of my apartment. Anyway, I'm going live. Call me. I'm at, what's the number here? 503-575-9980. 503-575-9980. We can talk. After all, it's real talk.
Telepath is a weekly digital newsletter filled with the latest paranormal news, trending topics, and fresh articles from some of the most popular critical thinkers in the community today. Stay informed on your favorite paranormal podcasts and live streaming talk shows. Interact with the Telepath and upload your paranormal story or pics. It could be featured in an upcoming edition. Sign up right now for the free Telepath newsletter at paranormal.radio. That's paranormal.radio.
Have you suffered in silence or experienced stress from a paranormal experience? Even if it happened 20 years ago, when thinking or talking about it today still makes you feel sick to your stomach or makes your heart beat faster, or you suddenly can't breathe. Maybe you even feel those old familiar signs of a panic attack trying to reach the surface. You could have unprocessed emotional responses. Those reactions of terror and trauma are no different than living through a horrible assault, childhood abuse, or a terrible car accident. It can be nearly impossible to find help. The very instance of seeing a ghost or encountering a cryptid could be clinically described as seeing or hearing things that aren't there. You could be considered psychotic, or at best, you're just not taken seriously. Out of a growing mountain of research, the National Institute for Integrative Healthcare showed that 8 out of 10 veterans who completed just 6 one-hour EFT sessions no longer tested positive for PTSD. If you've had paranormal trauma, you can contact Metaphorical Archaeology by calling 214-995-3754. Again, that's 214-995-3754. For a discreet consultation.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain, and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 945-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. That's 945-882-7221. Or go to the website, angioprim.com.
Welcome back. Thanks for listening to the show. I really appreciate you guys. If you want to support the show, you can go to lightingthevoid.com, sign up to our memberships at Patreon, where you can get access to the Astral Journal. Also, Ask Me Anything, the tarot readings, the astrological readings, Outside the Shack podcast, polls and blog posts and behind the scenes and more cool stuff that we have coming for you on that. And you can also grab stuff from the shop. Just keep in mind that any orders from the shop take about a month to get out now because of COVID. So it takes a couple of weeks because they're so backed up at the warehouse for them to even start the order, usually 2 or 3 weeks. And then once they start it, they'll get it out to you. Because I've been getting a lot of emails from you guys about, oh, you're still waiting on your stuff. And, well, that's what's going on. And I thought that they told everybody about that. But either way, grab a swimsuit, you know, like Sammy did. Grab a Lighting the Void swimsuit. That way, you know, when you get it, you'll be ready for it. Jennifer Dumford's our guest tonight, and the website for reference is urbandreamscape.com and liminaldreaming.com. We've been talking about the hypnagogic state, what you can do in these dream states, the practical uses, and some crazy stuff that's happened as well. And I wanted to tell you about this experience I had, Jennifer, just so you can tell me what you think. I've never talked about this before.
Cool.
So I was 12 years old, and I remember sometimes we don't remember stuff when we were a kid, but if our dreams are traumatic enough, for some reason we remember them. And I remember this hypnagogic state. It happened in the matter of a second, like 1 second. And I'm sitting in the chair. It's dark. I'm 12 years old. My dad and his girlfriend went out and they hired a babysitter. And, you know, a 12-year-old boy, this babysitter was cute, right? She was an older teenager and I was trying to impress her. Well, I didn't impress her, falling asleep in the chair. And I was afraid that I was going to, you know, start drooling or whatever in front of this girl. So what I did, I guess I was trying to control the way I slept so much that it messed me up. But what happened was, as I was falling asleep in this chair, I don't know when it happened or how it happened, but if you ever see those people, like, and you've done this before too, when you're falling asleep, you just jump real quick or something just jerks you as you're falling asleep, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, this time it was like that, but what jerked me was it was complete darkness as I'm falling asleep. And then out of nowhere, I see this oak tree and then wham, it just hits me. Pow! And I wake up in a second, almost like it's hard to explain. Almost like I just smacked an oak tree as if, like, I don't understand. That was it. And it jerked me so hard that I fell out of the chair when I was a kid.
Yeah.
What is that about?
So a couple things. For one thing, in addition to being not only like visual and aural, so very sound based, it's also very tactile. I mean, I have felt textures that don't actually exist in liminal dream states. So there's a lot of like sort of feeling involved. There's also, I've talked a couple times now about EEG states. Like there's all of the EEG states that we all experience every day, right? Like, so right now we're having a pretty engaged conversation, means we're probably in beta. So we've got our brain waves are going at like 14 to 40 hertz waves per second. So like you imagine like, you know, like a sine wave, like you're in math class, the way that a sine wave looks, right? Uh-huh. So imagine that you're having 14 to 40 of those ding, ding, ding per second, right? So that means we're awake and having an engaged conversation that goes as high as gamma. So like 40 or higher when you're super amped up and excited, you know, or down as low as like 0.5 to 3 when you're in super deep sleep. But most brainwave states, you know, when there are like 3 or 4 that we go through when we're awake and you know, 4 or 5 that we go through when we're asleep, different brainwave states measured by EEGs. We've all seen those brain machines. So most brainwave states are marked by a particular sine wave shape, right? You know, that one that's 40 or more, or that one that's 14 to 40, or that one that's 0.5 to 3, right? Theta, where we spend most of our sleep, has two. Hypnagogia and hypnopompia, which are by far the shortest EEG states that we experience in a 24-hour cycle, have six. So they're super chaotic. There's all of the every different brainwave that you kind of go through in the course of 24 hours is present in this tiny little period of time that's between waking and sleep, as you're falling asleep or as you're waking up. So it's super chaotic, basically. So when your leg jerks or your arm jerks, your body is kind of doing what your brainwaves are doing, which is just being really chaotic. And an image that I really like, if you think about metaphors, often waking consciousness is like the land and a sleeping unconscious is like the sea. But the place where the sea hits the land is where it creates lots of different waves, and that's where you surf. So I like to think about liminal dreaming as kind of like surfing consciousness. So that experience that you had of like something really fast and jerking or whatever, that hypnic jerks or myoclonic jerks, that's just part of body imitating brainwave. And then that really tactile sense of hitting a tree is part of what the experience is, because the experience is super tactile.
So it didn't have anything to do with me trying to control my sleep.
I'm sure it did. I mean, another one of the things about, especially when you're talking about when we're getting into the level of pure consciousness, anything that you're throwing into the mix affects it. So if you're trying to control it or not trying to control it, if you're upset, if you just had a fight with somebody, if you drank too much, if you ate really spicy food, if you haven't slept much, whatever. I mean, whatever it is you're doing is shifting the experience. So I'm sure the fact that you're trying to control it made a big difference.
Yeah, I think it did too, because it was like the first time that I ever tried to impress somebody. And it's like, well, I'm definitely not going to do that when they see me falling asleep with my mouth wide open, you know? But at the same time, it does kind of make me wonder about those states. Like, have you ever heard of exploding head syndrome? It's a real thing. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Well, I've had it before, and it's a real thing. Like, when I heard somebody talk about it, I was like, get out of here. That's not real. But it is kind of like when you're awake, but you have those jerks. It's just like something just like you feel this pressure or jerk in your head. And what it's usually from, you'll feel it in your ears too. And what that's usually from is like being too amped up or staying up too long or being on coffee or some, you're just overstimulated, but your body's tired. And so you'll jerk like that kind of, or have that experience in your head, but you're not asleep. And it's a really weird feeling, to be honest with you.
Wow. Yeah, there are so many strange states of consciousness. You know, once you start to dig in a little bit, you're like, oh, wow, this gets pretty weird. One of the things that I tell people to do if they're trying to figure out where hypnagogia is, because like I say, once you are, we all know it, we're all familiar with it. All you really have to do is realize where it is, and then it becomes very easy to find and play with, is public napping. Because if you're sleepy and you're starting to nap, but you don't feel quite comfortable, so like with you and the hot babysitter, or you don't want to be vulnerable, whatever, then you will not fall asleep as deeply, and you'll stay more in the liminal zone. So napping in public, if there's anywhere where you feel comfortable enough to nap, is a great way to find hypnagogia, because you probably won't go all the way asleep. Or napping in the car, like on a road trip. Not when you're driving, but that does happen. I mean, many of us have had the experience when you're driving and then you start to nod and then you start to hallucinate. That's hypnagogia. But yeah, also, if you're on a road trip, climb into the back seat and take a nap. And that's another great way to find hypnagogia.
Okay. Interesting. Oneronauticum. I don't know. I just had to say it for some reason.
You're good at it now.
Yeah, I got it down. They're saying it in the chat room, but it's this one's spelled with an O, actually. So tell me about, like, we talk to just about everybody in the dream world on this show now. What is it, like, if you had to tell somebody, man, you should really get my book, what would you say to that person? If they had five books to choose and they saw yours, why grab this one?
Because this is already happening in your consciousness, and it's an extraordinary experience and something that you can use in many different ways. And all you have to do is figure out how to recognize when it's happening. And once you do that, then there are so many different things that you can do with it and ways that you can play with it. You can have these extraordinary experiences of your own mind and your own internal experience. You can get more familiar with your psyche, mental healing, physical healing, meditation, creativity, problem solving. And we're all natural liminal dreamers. So it's a pretty quick and easy way to have a suddenly way more interesting experience of yourself and your world.
Fantastic. I'm sold. Yeah. So the go to either site, which one would you tell first timers to go to first? Or they both lead the same place?
They're attached.
I got you. So they forward to the next.
You can get to Urban Dreamscape from Liminal Dreaming. You can get to Liminal Dreaming from Urban Dreamscape.
I like the liminaldreaming.com. I love the way the site is set up. So
it's a much newer site.
So what do you think about fractals and sacred geometry? Do you see that in your dreams a lot?
Absolutely. Wow, for sure. So fractals or shapes are, I don't know, the mathematical movement of time, space, and how it, reflects itself infinitely through and through and through is definitely an experience of liminal dreaming for me. I don't know if you know the idea of the net of Indra, but it's a Buddhist idea, but it's basically a hologram, so it's fractal. And the idea is that any single point reflects every other point. So it's like imagine it's a net, and everywhere where the ropes cross, there's a pearl, and every pearl reflects every other pearl that's in the net. So everything is kind of available there. And that's an image that I often use for what the experience of hypnagogia is like. So, it gets pretty weird from there.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting. Just when I think I've learned everything there is to learn about dreams, that's the beautiful part of conscious exploration. There's always something else. There's a ton of stuff in here on your site about this stuff too. Earlier I was talking to you about what could this do for our practical life, and you've got a ton of stuff on this site that talks about health and, having compassion and all kinds of different things. It really is.
Health, meditation, compassion, people, insomnia.
Yeah. Yeah. Insomnia excuse my French, but that's a son of a bitch, right? Have you ever had that before? Like real insomnia?
I am starting to get it a little more often. Never when I was younger, but definitely I've worked with a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons that people come to my workshops and classes and such. Insomnia is one of them. And again, liminal dreaming is a great way of dealing with insomnia. It's a little counterintuitive because by learning to play with your mind as you're falling asleep, it might initially mean it takes you a little bit longer. You spend a little bit more time in the liminal zone between waking and sleeping before you fall asleep. But what ends up happening is for a lot of people, the experience of insomnia is stressful. And so falling asleep becomes stressful. And so then that becomes a vicious circle because already lying down and trying to go to sleep is stressful, and that makes you unable to sleep. And so if you start working with liminal dreaming, working with playing with hypnagogia, then the process of lying down and going into sleep becomes interesting and pleasant. And so even if you don't fall asleep right away, you're still having this pleasant experience. And then that's the first thing that happens. And then once you erase the stress of falling asleep, then you fall asleep faster.
That's the trick of the mind. It does that, huh?
That's the trick of the mind.
Kind of like those things where, like, when we really want something, it doesn't happen. But that's when you let it go, it tends to happen. That's really strange how that works.
Here's another thing people don't know about insomnia. So the first 3 hours, 3 or 4 hours that you're sleeping, three mostly, but 3 or 4, is you go through a couple of sleep cycles. Most of the deep sleep that you go through in that first part of the night. And then and the second part of the night, you're just going back and forth between theta, which is what most of our sleep is as adults, one of those brainwave states, same brainwave state that deep meditators go into, and REM, where the dreams are. Until you go through hypnopompia and wake up. So before electric light, people did not sleep through the night. That's not how it worked. You slept for 3 or 4 hours, and then you woke up probably for about 90 minutes, and then you went back to sleep into this theta REM thing. So before electric light, and you can read about it in literature, it's called first sleep and second sleep. And then the middle part is called the watch. So a lot of people who have insomnia wake up after 3 or 4 hours and they're awake for maybe 90 minutes and then they go back to sleep. And they're like, oh my gosh, I'm insomniac. I'm not sleeping through the night. But in fact, that's much more natural. That's actually what bodies do. And so if you're someone who thinks you have insomnia or you experience insomnia, but that's what you're doing, then just know that that's actually natural, what a body does. And what people would do during this middle state, which was called the watch, is that was supposed to be like the time that was for yourself. So you would, you know, smoke your pipe or read a book or just lie in bed and relax. Or maybe you'd go feed the animals or have sex or, you know, go see the children or whatever it was. But basically this 90 minute period that you had between first sleep and second sleep was this idea of like your own time. So what a lot of people define as insomnia is actually just natural sleeping.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I've had it before where I didn't sleep for once you get past the 48 hour mark, things get really crazy. Insane. And I never understood how they did that. The Navy SEALs, they keep those guys awake the whole time doing all that stuff. Cause 48 hours is, it's like the mind starts shutting off or the dream starts blending in with reality kind of. And it's really hard to explain.
I've done 72 hours a few times when I was younger.
Really? Yeah. That's it feels like it's borderline dangerous, don't it?
Yeah, you totally start hallucinating and crazy things come into your mind. You know, like I would kind of come to whatever in the middle of a sentence. And a lot of them were like math equations or like legal precedent. Well, that was determined by the case of Jones versus the state in 1970. And I'd be like, wait, what am I even saying? Is this real? I have no idea.
That's exactly what I was going through. I felt like Neo in the Matrix where, you know, I had to find Morpheus and find my way out of it, you know?
Turns out reality is strange and not that fixed.
All right. So again, we don't have a lot of time left. Can you tell everybody we only got like a minute left, where they can find you on social media, how they can follow
for sure.
And all that.
I tweet a dream a day on Twitter. I've been doing that for 11 years. And that's at Onerifer, O-N-E-I-R-O-F-E-R. Onerifer. You can also look up my name, Jennifer Dumpert. You can find me at Liminal on Facebook at Liminal Dreaming. You can find me at UrbanDreamscape.com and at LiminalDreaming.com.
Fantastic. And it was awesome talking to you. Thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate having you here.
Really my pleasure. I have enjoyed our conversation immensely.
You guys, I'll leave all the links in the chat so you can have access to that when you get the archives. The archives are a few shows behind, as always. That's why you should, you know, listen to the live show so you can get all the stuff when it comes out and get involved and hang out with us in the chat rooms and callers and all that stuff. I want to thank our producer, Pacho. Please don't copy the show without written permission. Music was by Chronox and Steezy. Stevie, big shout out to our patrons for lighting the void. We wouldn't do this without you. The Fringe FM staff and all of you listeners. Stay tuned for The Secret Teachings with Ryan Gable. We'll be back tomorrow night, same channel. Good night. Love you.
Staff. Listener discretion is advised.